Good morning. This is Len Iaquinta for Community Matters, and our guest this morning is Sheriff of Kenosha County, David Zerner. He is the 59th sheriff and was sworn in on January 3rd of this year. He replaced Sheriff David Beth, who retired after a total of 40 years of service to the department. Good morning, Sheriff.
Good morning, Len.
Great to have you with us today. Well, you've had an interesting start to your career as sheriff, and you've had to contend with your first big snow and ice emergency relatively recently. How did that go for you?
Well, I'll tell you, it was, like you said, in the beginning, when we were speaking, baptism by ice, per se. We have a great county executive, and she knows how to do all this very well. I'm blessed to have a fantastic emergency management crew, and I've been working for the last 2 days with our emergency management, our command staff, and the county executives team. Tamir Ronstadt over there is our chief of staff, and then of course Joe Patente and the chairman of the county board, Gabe Nudo. They've all helped me make sure that we had everything we needed to keep everybody rolling really well. So the county exec's out of town, so I've been communicating with her through the email system, letting her know that everything's going on. We have warming centers set up and the roads were good, and the rate at which the power was being restored. But I tell you, that's a whole new thing for me, because other than actually responding out on the road and making sure people are out of the ditches and they're safe and the blocking the trees and the wires, yeah, we're trying to move all kinds of different boulders at one time, and it's been great. And honest to goodness, we've done a great job, and I appreciate everybody's help. It's been wonderful.
It's a team effort, and it does seem to have gone quite smoothly, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Now, in the news recently, we've heard a lot about something called the DARE program, D-A-R-E. Mm-hmm. I wonder if you would start by telling us what that means and what's going on with the proposed changes to the structure of the DARE program. And we'll talk about that a little bit so that people understand a little bit of the background behind the headlines, sir.
Sure. Well, DARE, some may not know, it stands for Drug Awareness Resistance Education. And the DARE program here has been led by our former Deputy Friendly and DARE officer, Ray Rowe, for 20 years. Long time. Prior to that, my predecessor, Sheriff Beth, he was a DARE officer. So it's easy to see. It's a beloved and coveted program. Deals with the children in the elementary schools. The majority of it is teaching the fifth graders drug resistance, drug awareness, not doing drugs. But it's not just that. I was never a DARE officer, but I was a school resource officer. And I work with Ray on some events, and I'm very involved in the community. So I used a lot of his resources over the years. So I had a little bit of background with it, but it's a fun program and people love it. But as you know, we have a very different set of drug circumstances in this community than we did 20 and 30 years ago. So yeah, absolutely. So what as we progress on here into my candidacy and now my office, the questions were rising about DARE and the monies. So more interest was taken in what we've spent money on as a department and in that program. So some of the expenditures that my predecessor utilized DARE funds, and this is not county funds. This is all donations. He used the money for some other nonprofits and things that people questioned. So that came up at the level of the county board, some committees, and those questions were asked of them. And Sheriff Beth came forward and explained what the expenditures were. And that program is all within the province of the sheriff. The county board doesn't control those funds, but nevertheless, we answer to them. So we answer to that board, and we have to be forthright 100% and do what's appropriate. So they may not have agreed with everything he did, but at the end of the day, he did what he did for, I believe he said, it was for kids. So that's what it was. Now you're asking me what's coming forward down the headlines. The county board had written a resolution changing some of the structure, not changing the DARE program, not changing the structure of the program, but they were looking for some oversight, or they are looking for some oversight, and some in the guise of a new committee, like a new board per se. But it went back and forth, and it was voted on in a couple of different ways. And by the end of it, the sheriff, myself, has a lot of control over who's on that board and things of that nature. So it really didn't have a lot of teeth per se. And actually one of the gentlemen that was one of the authors of it initially said, I don't even know why we're doing this. And he voted against it at the end of the meeting. So it got sent from, I'm, I'm I've been around for a long time, but I'm really new to working full time with a board and of that nature. So what had happened is it went from that committee back to the county chair, and he sent it to finance for their approval of it or their review of it, because it does deal with money, and the funds and the answers as to what I would have to do and who I would inform as to how the expenditures went. So that may be a little bit boring, but that's the reality of it, is that it all comes down to money and accountability. So, and now it's in the hands of finance, and it will go forward when they get a chance to review it. But we've had plenty of committee meetings and meetings canceled over the last few days. So things are, last week it was bad, so they canceled the meeting, and now here we go again. So that's where it's at right now. It's not to change the DARE program in any way. Some people thought that I wanted to end the DARE program. Absolutely under no circumstances did I want to end the DARE program. But I do have plans and initiatives that I'll talk about later in this meeting, reference my ideas about where we need to go with the education of our youth in reference to that.
So this is a matter of governance and oversight. And my presumption is that some process is going to be set up to periodically review expenditures after they're made or before they're made?
After. If I wanted to spend any of the DARE funds, which would have been donations, it's not grant money, or if these are all donated by private parties and businesses locally, if I wanted to spend it on something other than DARE, I would have to get approval from that committee and through the county board. And that's all it was. But I had no intentions of doing that. And if I was in an emergency state or we needed funds for something in a crucial way, the county board, in my perspective, would already know. So I would already have gone to them for assistance if we needed it.
Well, I've always been happy to contribute to these kinds of programs run by the Sheriff's Department and the Police Department that are aimed at our children and keeping them safe and well-informed and keeping them safe from these dangerous drugs that are now on the streets. It's a nightmare to even think about, let alone have to watch. It's really an awful thing. So DARE has some changes ahead, you think, in terms of programmatic initiatives that you might like to see to enhance it in the future? Did I gather that?
Yes. Not changes to DARE, because DARE itself, that curriculum is structured and that's set a very certain way. And DARE, it's not just for drug awareness. That program, and I talked to Ray Rowe about this after the election, and he gave me more information about it. It's a big thing for a child's self-confidence, their team building skills. There's a lot that goes on in that program. So it's not to change that program, but I want to augment the education that our youth get, reference some of the older kids, because it's easy to tell a fifth grader, give them the basic information, but we're dealing with a whole different thing now. So I don't want our most knowledgeable officers training only fifth graders. I want them and we have school resource officers that are fantastic at this, and they do work with the youth in AODA, alcohol and other drug abuse training. And I did that myself at Wilmot High School. And then I collaborated with the SRO at the other high school, Central, and we would do trainings together with our staff and our teachers. When they tell you you're new at this, they tell you you're going to give a presentation to 1,000 people, you grab onto whatever help you can and say, I might want a crutch on this one, you know, it's going to make me nervous. But we did a lot of work there, and we did a great job. And we were fortunate to have teams that would come out and help us and work with us. And, you know, I was on some nonprofits at the time and I had resources in that regard as well. But my idea with this, you asking about the augmenting, from what I've learned recently, because I'm part of a opioid panel, I learned that our local government, whether it be unified or city or county, have already purchased in the past and paid for programs for the older students, the high school students and even middle school. And it's difficult to get that implemented and to get that used, because it takes resources, it takes humans. And teachers, just the idea behind these programs, the one in particular that I've been looking at that we have, it's all teacher-based. And as you know, teachers are very tasked. They're very overwhelmed, and no one's gonna say, oh, these teachers have plenty of time. They do not. So we're working on this, and I'm working with a very talented group of individuals on the opioid task force, and we're going to come up with something. We're going to work with it. City's working with Unified on many things right now. We're going to come up with it.
All right. Well, that sounds great. There is a great curriculum that's been put together for fifth graders. There's no reason, I understand you to be saying that there's no reason why you'd want to tamper with that. But stopping at the fifth grade just doesn't seem like it makes sense in today's
environment. That's my perspective. Absolutely. Right.
Sheriff Zerner, there's been a county board ordered review of public safety responses in the past and planning for future incidents in the city and the county. There was the civil disturbances that downtown and uptown. I don't need to reprise what that was about. I wonder how this interfaces with you and your work. What's your office been asked to provide so far? Is this taking a lot of time to provide goodness knows what kinds of documentation? What's going on?
Well, the answer is no, not yet. What you're talking about is a Jensen Hughes, it's a corporation that does these independent reviews of public safety and our emergency management. And we have, obviously, Kenosha County is still in the limelight. I'm here to tell you, when I go off to trainings and I walk in the room, they're like, hey, how are you doing? How's it going? It's been 2 years and it's still in the forefront of everyone's mind. If you're from Kenosha, they want to talk to you about it. So that being said, this is Jensen Hughes. It's a corporation that, from what I understand, very highly regarded. I spoke with the county executive last week. The contract with that corporation I believe it's completed. I have a copy of it, but the unsigned copy on what it's going to entail. The only issues that I can see coming forward, so I haven't been asked personally yet to give anything or of our staff, but we're all aware of it. We've reviewed it. We talked about it. I've heard them talk about it in the county board. And when I was running for office, it was discussed with me by several county board supervisors that were interested in it, which I believe was where the impetus for that came from. So I was obviously asked about it multiple times, but I can't talk a lot about the issues, but as you can well imagine, Len, there are several lawsuits pending from persons during that unrest. So I don't know personally where that's going to slow up some of that research for this corporation, but those lawsuits are pending. Some are.
So I wonder if you could share with us what the contract finally, as it was finally put together, calls for in terms of what it's going to request from the Sheriff's Department. Could you share?
It doesn't say what it's going to request of us. It's very well written, very well drafted. Obviously, some very intelligent people did it. I was reading and thinking, well, this is, wow, a lot. But it just to be very vague, which I think would behoove me, it lays out the plan and how of their work. It's a contract for their work and how the expectations of them, and in a timeline fashion as to what's expected and to when we could expect it to be completed reasonably if everything was perfect.
So that schedule of activities, does that call for any particular reports or documents from you at this time, or is it left pretty vague? Okay. When do you think this will close, according to what you, as much as we know now, which is of predicting the future, I realize, but when do you think it'll close from your perspective? The information gathering part of it.
From my perspective, it looks like it's ready to go.
So you think it's ready
to
start?
I don't have all the background, sir.
So do you have any idea when the information collection from your department could end? Wondering how long you're going to be burdened with this.
I haven't even been tasked with anything at this point.
So it's way too early.
Way too early, yes, sir.
Okay. Do you have any experience with this particular firm, or any of your colleagues around the state or the nation that you interface with have any skinny on this firm, and have they shared anything with you?
I do not have any information about this firm. I've never worked with them. I've never been involved in something like this. What I have been involved with is, I was part of the units that were responding during the unrest. So I had gathered some imaging and video during that time, and some of my stuff was used for trainings and things of that nature from entities all over the state. But other than assisting and compiling a very basic amount of that material, I know that we put together trainings to try to assist other agencies if they were ever in something like we dealt with. But other than that, no, I've not been involved in anything like that.
From your perspective, I know this is a tough question, but from your perspective, what kind of an outcome would you like to see? What would make a report useful to you and the other public safety folks in the city and the county, sir?
Well, I'd like it to be, it'd be my hope that it would lay out a nice framework in case, God forbid, anything like that happened again, that we wouldn't, I think everyone did a phenomenal job for as quickly as that thing took off. You were here as well. You saw it like everyone did. But I would like for us to have the tools that we would need. I would like for us to be able to better plan, which we've done. I mean, we haven't stopped preparing and training. There was grant money came from the federal government. You know, KPD was able to do all kinds of things. We've done some great things. We were able to obtain equipment that we didn't have prior. During the arrest, then we were borrowing equipment from other agencies. We were literally sending a van load to fly a few counties away to grab equipment that we needed right now and to get it back here within a couple hours. So, but we were able to plan. So I would like for us to be able to plan better. Like for everyone to be able to articulate their needs ahead of time. So all the stakeholders would be better prepared. That would be my goal. And I think just in knowing what's taking place behind the scenes over the last 2 years, that's already in full effect. We are already prepared better than we were. Not completely, but we have a lot of work to do.
Well, no matter how well prepared you are, we all know that we can always be better prepared if we keep our minds open and search for new practices and maybe old ideas that need a little twist. Our
Absolutely.
guest this morning here on Community Matters is the 59th Sheriff of Kenosha County, David Zerner. And we're welcoming him as he begins his term and learning about him and his office. Sheriff Zerner, you've been in office now 2 months. Rough and tightly. What's the surprises you've had since you walked into that? And I know you're not new to the sheriff's department. That's hardly the case. But I wonder. I know that when you take a new role, you see things, you hear things, you look back, and things are confirmed in your mind. And some things surprise you. Sometimes you learn new things, or you learn new questions you're going to seek the answers to.
I tell you, some of the surprises. I mean, like you just said, I've been here a long time. I've been here almost 25 years, so not real surprised at anything. But this is a very high-paced job, which I love because I'm a very, very energetic individual. My wife's not happy with me working a lot of hours all the time, but that's okay. We're getting through it. I got to tell you, when I've been trying to meet with all the department heads. Individuals that affect us and that we can affect. Corporation Council, you know, that's the legal entity here for the county government that tries to keep us out of trouble, keep the taxpayers' dollars with the government and not being doled out on lawsuits, frivolous lawsuits. But that is one of the surprises, is how litigious this place is there, because we have detentions. We have a lot of persons that we care for every day, and that's the detentions division. Can see a lot of legal action. So we really have to be mindful constantly of giving those individuals that are with us the best care that we can and making sure they have everything they need. And which, not to delve off the topic, but a couple years ago, you may remember that body cameras became a big thing with our agency, with all law enforcement agencies. We were able to get them relatively fast, and the county government came through for us. Once we articulated how much that we thought we needed them and how important they were, they came through. It was a very expensive endeavor, but we did it. I'm here to tell you, those body cameras have paid for themselves over and over again because it shows exactly what is taking place.
So they're fully implemented now for your sheriff's deputies, is that correct?
Every person on patrol, every person in the courts, every person working for us in detentions, both facilities, are all wearing an active body camera.
Can
Everyone.
they be turned on and off at will?
Well, when you're engaged with an individual, they're on. That's our policy. They can be turned off if you're sitting in a parking lot because of the bandwidth. It takes up a lot of storage. We have to pay for the storage. So if they're not engaged in a call for service, which we know when they are, they have, you know, on the radio. So they're not, deputies and correctional officers aren't allowed to turn them off at will if they're engaged with an individual. You know, if they're on, which would be like a call for service on patrol, or, you know, if they called it on the air to their command center, they would be on a call per se. So you say by will, we can't turn them off, but digitally it's still reviewing, so it can still be retrieved.
Oh, really? Okay. I didn't
There's
know
no
that.
hiding from it. There's no hiding.
I didn't know that. Well, that's great. Now, 2 months isn't a long time to acquire a list of accomplishments, but it's a long enough time for a fella to have a list of things that he wants to accomplish or wants to delve into. And maybe we could talk a little bit about that, sir.
I have both, actually.
Okay.
I have a list of things that we've done and things, a list of things I want to do. What I can tell you, and I'll look away here first, I have some notes for you. I wanted to tell you about this stuff. We're right as I was taking office, we're very lucky. We were discussing the budget at the county board level in a committee. And we discussed, and I made the statement to the county executive that I appreciated her. I appreciated all of her effort and her graciousness with listening and helping us get what we needed as an agency, safety equipment, things of that nature. And I made the statement. I said, ma'am, I'm not trying to pick on you. I said, I appreciate you. However, I've told you multiple times, we're not going to be able to improve our drug unit and get better results without more staff. Because in my 24 years, we have increased deputies on multiple occasions for multiple reasons, but never in my tenure has there been a detective position added. And that kind of quieted the room for a moment. That was a surprise, as it is to most people. And during that meeting, a county board supervisor said, and Sheriff Beth was there. He was still the sheriff. And they said, and Sheriff Beth said, I'd love for somebody to make a motion to give us some more detectives. And the county board supervisor said, I'll make the motion to get the sheriff's department two more detectives, new FTEs. And they passed. And the whole county board agreed. And those two individuals are in training right now. We were promoted. We had a wonderful promotion ceremony. And we promoted two worthy. We had a list ready. We promoted two more. And they are now in training, taking their basic. There's a class called boot camp for detectives, take the basics, and they're two high-speed individuals. One of them has a master's degree. One of them has been on the job for a very long time and one of the highest producing deputies we've ever had. And I tell you, those two individuals are going to really do some good for this community. And that gives us room to let them fill in spots in general assignment. And we're going to be able to move two detectives into the drug unit. And we're going to grow that that clandestine drug unit the way it needs to be grown.
Wow, that's impressive. You can't grow and improve your effectiveness without staff, right? And education and training and constant updating are the stuff of success. Is that right?
Well, the idea behind training, that's what I said. I have both. Well, that's both. We've already done a bunch of training, and we have a trajectory for our plans for training. And to give you an indication is that I've attended one FBI school. It's called FBI LEADA. It's a leadership academy, and they have a trilogy. There's three classes: supervisor leadership, command leadership, and executive leadership. And all three of these are robust, and they are phenomenal trainings. They take place all over the country. Now, we do have a decent training budget. It used to be too small. It has grown. The county board has come through for us. It's respectable now, but there's so much training necessary. And I mean, from every facet, we need diversity training. We need weapons training. We need skills training. We need de-escalation training. Everybody does, but somewhere that's been lacking for so many years in this agency has been the training of our supervisors. Okay. So what this trilogy does, this gives a really phenomenal foothold to a new supervisor. And if you can get them one, two, et cetera, of these classes, they are really poised for growth. And we are a young agency. And that's something I want to tell you about what we're dealing with, because you're going to talk about staffing. I know you are. That we need to position these young leaders for growth. And that's what we're doing. And the way we've done this is because these classes are expensive. When you have to send an individual out of the community, it's excessively expensive. You're paying for travel. You're paying for that hotel room. You're paying an exorbitant amount for meals. But if we can train them here locally, it's a third of the cost. That said, we have reached out to FBI LEADA. Country Police Department has reached out to them. They are going to put on trainings, and we are going to host trainings. We each agency already has one scheduled. So it is our projection. My command staff tells me, my captains are sharp. The timeline for this, and I misspoke once, I said by the end of 23, but within 2024, every supervisor at the Kenosha County Sheriff's Office, every supervisor will have the entire FBI LEADA trilogy under their belt. And we're going to be able to do that because we have a decent training budget, but also because we're going to do a bulk of it in-house and not pay for those extra expenses.
Well, that's terrific.
When we host the training, we are given several free seats in that training, which is one of the ways we do it.
That's nice. Well, there is not a dollar wasted on training, in my opinion. I've been a manager for most of my adult life, and I have never regretted a nickel I have spent on training, even when it is expensive, because you don't get results if your people aren't educated and trained and kept up to date. So I salute you for that. That's terrific. Anything else you want to talk about in that regard? Otherwise, I'd like to move on to some of the initiatives you have on your list, Sheriff. For the next year or two, you know?
Sure. Well, we have several. Let's talk about the Detective Bureau. That's I campaigned on that. So growing the drug unit is very important now. I guess I talked too aggressively about it because some of the detectives thought I was going to take half the bureau and make them drug agents. I can't do that. Okay. I am excited about Chief Patton. Pat Patton is the chief of police for Kenosha County, or excuse me, the city of Kenosha. We have good relationship. We have good working relationship. Our agencies seem to be working very well together. I want to be able to do more collaboration with them. I mean, we're right here for Pete's sake, you know. The agencies surrounding Kenosha County, Racine County Sheriff's Office, I'm very good friends with them. City of Racine is struggling with their staffing right now, so I don't know how much we're going to be able to do up there with them. But as far as our drug investigations, I've had a really good inroad with Walworth County now, so I'm hoping that we can all work together to do something very fast, because these drug trafficking doesn't stop at the county line, as you're well aware. So yeah, even with Lake County, because a lot of it comes and goes from Lake County. But so growing that drug unit's imperative to me.
Well, I'll be talking, I hope, soon. I've invited the new police chief to come on the program and give us an update. So perhaps we'll hear from him soon.
We had a meeting with Department of Justice, Department of Corrections yesterday. I'm sure he's great. He'll come in. So reference the you know, I'm on the opioid task force, and we have a coalition now. I can't remember the acronym. I apologize. But I've been working with this. The opioid task force has been meeting in person now, and we have these new initiatives. Now, there's ARPA dollars that are still at play, and we also have the opioid settlement funds. So if you're not familiar with that, Len, because of the opioid crisis, you know, the pharmaceuticals, the pharmacies themselves, they've all been this lawsuit they've settled, or they've had this lawsuit is done, and there are vast amounts of money available to the counties, to the whole, it's nationwide, it gets distributed up through particular law offices, and our dollars, we have plenty of dollars here now. I think 1.7 million is already here locally. So that being said, I've been part of this panel, with, Chief Patton is part of it. Chief Smetana, Human Services, Terry Foss, her boss, Becky Dutter, John Jansen has been attending as Director of Human Services. So it's a robust group of, Rita Brown is there as well. And I served on some nonprofits with Rita in the past, and she was the head of the whole council for years. So there's a lot of opinions and a lot of experience in the room. And this panel is to try to determine how those dollars get spent. So I can't use it to buy weapons, and I can't use it to buy police cars, but I can, if I get earmarked for some of that money and we have detention. So I've already made my position clear. I want some money to help the detention situation. And we've done some, you talk about the initiatives, what we did, we have MAT in our jail. That's medication assisted treatment. So people who are addicted to opioids, this is an injectable medication, and we're financing that treatment now, through grant money. And initially we were using the grant money that the county already had, but now we have our own grant for it. So they're coming into our facility to give this treatment, this medication assisted treatment, and this is going to grow. We just answered a letter to a individual with the state today, with the fact that we want to keep this treatment going. We want to make it more robust. So I met with the district attorney, Human Services, John Jansen, several people last week. Some people don't think this is the best. Some people think it's great, but it's, we just have to have the money and the personnel, but it's more in custody treatment. And this will actually help when the individuals come out of custody with their addictions, because the follow-up is the problem from my perspective. We have to be able to treat that person all the way through. So they can't just, some people don't understand that this situation is so complex that once they leave custody, it's so easy to, fall back. So if they can leave with care, counseling, follow-up. So anyway, that's the plan. So
well, that's terrific, because what you're talking about is a very intentional practice that is research-based, as I understand it.
That's right.
That can be effective.
When I make the statement to Mike Gravely, there's no question mark as to who I am. So I'm a punitive guy. I'm a policeman, right? We're law enforcement, but you have to have a bigger perspective when the higher you go up. You have to see the whole picture. And so I said to Mike Gravely, I said, well, here's my question, Mike. Some people that I've been in meetings, they put a lot of time, some of our personnel put a lot of time into setting up these discharges. We don't want this just to become a bond reduction where people jump into a program so they can get out of custody fast or something like that. And he said, we have to get them in the program. I'm committed to this. I said, well, he says, we're here to get your buy-in. I asked John Jansen, what's the ask, sir? And he said, we need your buy-in before we can move forward. It's your jail. I said, well, we want to help people. And if you're telling me that your personnel are going to be able to help us do that, we're in. So my command staff was there. My chief deputy Miller was there, and he's a sharp guy. And he's like, well, we've done everything that we can to help everybody in our facility. So give them the best quality of life. And he says, we're going to do what we can. The money's here. So it's not our tax dollars, and we're going to try to help. So
well,
I don't know if it's going to work out, but we're going to do everything we can. Like I said, I promise.
Arresting people doesn't do any good if you have 100% recidivism, does it?
Well, that's exactly correct. And this is something that when I did an opioid panel while I was running, and that was one of the things that the agent said from Border. They said, you cannot arrest your way out of this. We can't seize our way out of this. This has to be multifaceted, multi-collaboration. Everybody has to be on board. So the more perspective you can get on this, the better. So we're doing all we can, and we're getting help from everywhere.
You mentioned diversity a little bit earlier, and that's more than just a catchphrase. It's really an essential component of law enforcement and everything within our sphere of government today. I wonder if you have some strategies to develop the pipeline. I don't know how you attack that. We're a small city. We're a small department. We don't have oodles of money. We can't just throw money at people. So we have to really be very intentional about how we develop a pipeline. And I'm certainly no expert on developing a pipeline in your field. I am in mine, but not in your field. What about developing that pipeline? What are you thinking about that in terms of the needs of your department, Sheriff?
Well, let me tell you, we have done, we've made so many moves in a very positive way to try to do that. We're a very diverse department, actually. We have in jail. So what we've done is we have a full-time recruiter now. Deputy Gonzalez, Jose Gonzalez, is a full-time recruiter. He came off of patrol, sharp individual. He's worked in every division here. Deputy Maring was doing this for quite a while, and she has been promoted to sergeant. So Deputy Maring, she has trained Deputy Gonzalez, and I talked to him. I knew we were going to talk about this, so I said, hey, come on down. I want to talk to you for a while. So I picked his brain, and he gave me so many things to talk about. We are on all these different websites now. We are recruiting everywhere, all the job fairs at all the universities around. We're dealing with Reliant Hiring Solutions. We've been to La Crosse, Western Illinois University. They're going all over the place trying to recruit. Northwest Technical College. And of course the job fairs. We're working with ZipRecruiter, Jobs to Careers, LatinJobs.org, and he's a Hispanic Spanish speaker, AfricanAmericanHires.com, JobsForWomen.net, U.S. Able Veterans, I Hire Law Enforcement. So everything that all the obvious things a recruiter would be looking to do, they're doing it. And they've been doing it for a couple of years. Sitting in patrol as a supervisor, I would run the roll calls and get all the deputies going on with the gear they need, and whatnot. And then here would come Deputy Maring on a Saturday morning, walking down the hallway. What is she doing? She's not working today. And then I find out she's recruiting. She's running tests for jailers. She's running tests. She's running interviews with staff, people that are hiring. Because the old days when I took this test, you could have 1,000 applicants in a cycle over a year or two. There were 250 people in the cafeteria at Tremper 24 years ago when I applied. hundreds, several hundred for a couple jobs. And now we just had one at Wilmot High School. There was 25 people there. So we work constantly. And I just sat with Clara Tapper from Human Resources the other day. And she said the word evergreen. And I had to stop them. I'm sorry to bother you. I said, what is that word? Is that a nursing home? What is evergreen? It sounds nice. What is that? And she said, oh, that's just a term we use. This recruiting process never stops. It's evergreen. I said, oh, okay. I felt silly for asking the question, but the reality is that that's the difference, Len. I had to give a postcard to Chris Fox in personnel with my address on it, and she would mail it to me when the application process started. That's how rare it was when I took the job. Now it never stops. You can apply online tonight at midnight, and tomorrow morning, Deputy Gonzalez is going to be calling you, trying to get you to come in as soon as you can to take your test. So it never stops. Now, you may remember recently it was dire. We were down 30 people at one time in our detentions division. And that's bad. I mean, that's tough. So we were to the point where we were almost letting deputies work overtime shifts to come help out in the jail. We didn't do that, didn't need to. But the reality is that right now we're down 8 in detentions. 6 in patrol, which is not bad. We just had a graduation. My notes are from a couple, we were going to do this a couple of days ago. So my notes were a little different because since we've had a graduation ceremony that I spoke at it at Gateway, and we graduated a class of correctional officers. So as of right now, we're only down 8 correctional officers.
Well, has there been an impact on that with respect to the not housing federal prisoners anymore?
Well,
Sheriff Zerner, is what I impacted it at all? And has that impacted your finances? How is that working out? And how does that impact your staffing? Because the safety of people and the safety of your staff and the safety of the people being detained is, of course, of paramount importance for many reasons, besides just keeping us away from lawsuits.
For sure. I can give you a couple things about housing federal inmates. We currently house U.S. Marshal inmates. We still do that. We don't have very many. I can tell you right now. I printed this out this morning. Today we have 38 federal inmates, and they're all U.S. Marshal inmates, and they all are from Milwaukee, the Milwaukee facility there. We do not detain any ICE detainees any longer. At this time, we don't have plans to bring them back for several reasons. And number one, I was asked about that, and the first thing I explained was we are. At that time, I said, we are fractured in our detention division. We are too shy on people. They're a young crew. They work 12-hour shifts. They're tasked to bring on the tremendous load of work that the detainees do. Because you may not understand, we're not just bringing more inmates. We're bringing in an excessive amount of work because they come and go every day. We bus them back and forth to court in Chicago, in Milwaukee. We're taking multiple van loads to flight lines and in Gary, Indiana, Rockford, Illinois, sometimes the back end of O'Hare. And we're driving right on the flight line. It's a lot because 3 vans, that's 36 detainees and at least 6 deputies and perhaps a follow car. You know, it can be very, very consuming in your manpower, wears them out. So at the end of the day, we were only getting a few bucks a day, 75 or 70. Per body, but that's, you got to pay for their food, you got to pay for their care. And then we have to pay the overtime for the deputies, because when I send 6 or 8 deputies out of state, they're getting overtime and we weren't being compensated for overtime. So how much of a savings is it? People were resigning because the workload was so difficult. Now I'm not a softie. We did this for 20 years. I bust those gentlemen and those ladies all over the region, you know, probably bought some goodies with that extra money I was able to earn. But the reality is that we aren't in that same situation anymore. And the personnel are just too new. They're too young and our facilities aren't up to speed. When I say they're not up to speed, I mean, to detain the ICE detainees, they have a different set of rules for their detainees. They're not prisoners, they're detainees. Some of them haven't committed a crime other than coming to America, which is a crime if you're illegal, depending on your perspective, but nevertheless, we have canines in our facilities now. We have canines that are trained just for detentions to sniff out things in detentions alone. Can't use a canine around ICE detainees. All of our people, even our jailers, now carry tasers. Can't use a taser on a detainee. You're just asking for a lawsuit. Okay. It caused problems. I was supervising in the conveyance division where all the transports would take place. And it was always an issue as to what use of force you use on a detainee, and then there were always follow-ups. So there are a lot of things that would problems that would be exacerbated with the detainees. But number one thing is our staffing. We're just getting it up to speed, and we're getting them up to speed. So as of right now, it's difficult.
So you're focusing your resources on what matters to the people of Kenosha County, is how it sounds to me, and not trying to solve other people's problems, and then in essence having to subsidize others, other departments, other entities with our people, which seems like a very bad idea to be doing. That sounds great. We don't have a lot of time left, Sheriff, but I just wonder if there anything else you'd like to tell us about the status of the detention center in terms of safety or budget that the public ought to be aware about.
Absolutely, Glenn. How much time do you have left?
Just a couple minutes.
Okay, I'm sorry. Our detentions division, this is also part of the ICE detainee issue. The downtown jail is called the pretrial facility. It's a very old building. Okay. In my notes, I have the term outdated. You know, I've asked for opinions of other people, the people that actually run those facilities. I've toured them. I've been through them. KCDC is in better shape, but the downtown facility, it's tough. It's dire. So we're already spending money repairing things. Just from my cursory walkthroughs, we had an inspection recently that showed a couple issues, and now we have construction companies up here fixing those things. People worry about the expense of it, but if an inmate or an individual that's in our custody gets hurt because something's broken and we knew about it, then shame on us, because that's a lawsuit, for Pete's sake, and plus it could hurt someone. But talking with the command staff and talking with the captain of detentions, the lieutenants from those facilities, and the correctional officers, they're the ones that are all over the place all the time. And the DSOs, that's a correctional officer, KCDC. They see where the issues are, and the buildings themselves are in need of repair, and we're working on that right now. We're cleaning them up. We're doing a lot of painting. We're getting those things cleaned up, painted, and safe. And that's
our goal right now. Thank you. Our guest today on Community Matters has been the 59th Sheriff of Kenosha County, David Zerner. To all my listeners, thank you for listening. Stay informed and get involved. Good day.